Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, I'm just dealing with technical difficulties. All right, hang on. One moment. All right. Anyways, and then he finally sent his own son to deal with these people, and these people outright killed him, representing Jesus being sent. So, and even throughout the Old Testament, there's the story of Isaac being a forerunning picture of it. So, yes, allegories are very powerful storytelling elements that we can and should use as authors. And as fantasy authors, we really we have an added ability to write it, as we can write in another world, such as C.S. Lewis did. He's showing another angle of that sacrifice, as I did in the Inkuan, where I told it from another angle. The important thing to note, though, is that you shouldn't throw in an allegory, and I'm talking specifically for allegories of the sacrifice, God sending his son to earth to die on the cross. Don't throw that in just because you feel like you should. Don't shoehorn it in. I believe you have to do it correctly. And I heard you again. You have to do it correctly.
Shoehorning anything in doesn't work well.
No, don't shoehorn anything in. So what you need to do is look at it. If you want to write an allegory, and again, I believe Christian authors should get theirs out of the way. If you want to write one, you need to look at it and say, what angle do I want to show? What particular aspect of it do I want to tell anew? So, for instance, in Narnia, it was very much focused on this is the exchange, and because it was an exchange, Aslan came back to life. It was one of the first ones, so it's the first allegory books. So Lewis could get away with a looser, but these days, since we have so many allegories, your book has to stand out. So first of all, you need to bring something, know what side of it you want to show. What is your goal in doing it? The next thing I would say, if you want to write an allegory, is you need to strike a balance of making sure it is essential to your plot, but isn't the crux of your plot. Because at this point, we have written so many fantasy allegories. I read a book a couple years ago. I'm not going to mention names. It's an indie author, a sweet little girl. Sweet girl wrote it. It may have been this author that I found. No, I found her through the Homeschooled Authors group, but I had found her previously through another group, but then lost her. But anyways, her book, the sacrifice allegory element, was a climax. And because of that, because I knew what the book was doing, there was no tension. However, if I go to another book, and I'm going to pick on a mainstream book here, that a lot of it, and I otherwise really, really love this series. It's Dragons in Our Midst by Ryan Davis. That book
I need to read those.
Yeah, they're a pretty good series. I love their take on dragons, and they might be part of my inspiration for Half Hidden. Or at least a lot of my thought-spiration. I disliked how they did the allegory because it felt too inconsequential. Yeah, it happened, but it didn't feel like it really added something to the plot. It felt like it was shoehorned in just because they needed the Jesus character to die and come back to life so he could do something. It didn't feel essential to a plot. Whereas with Narnia, we can go back and pick on it. With Narnia, okay, I misplaced my brain again. With Narnia, in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Narnia, you have Edmund. Now, Brian, come back here. In Narnia, the sacrifice scene was not the main climax. I mean, it was not the end goal of the book. The end goal was the defeat of the White Witch. And the plot did not alleviate for the thing. So Aslan, when he was killed in the pre-climax, it was essential to the plot. It did not feel shoehorned in, but at the same time, it was not the full. When it happened, there was still things to be achieved, so that it was not a story when he came back to life.
Yeah.
So you have to create a good balance between making it essential to the plot, but at the same time, making sure it is not the plot. Occasionally, you can get away with, for instance, being Coolin. It is the allegory aspect is more of the climax, but you don't really realize what it's doing until after it's done.
Yeah, I like that.
Which is something I like allegories where it hits you as it happens or when it's over. A good example I know of for that one would be The Light Princess by George MacDonald. Not many people know about that one, but it's the same. But this is the same author who wrote. This is the author who C.S. Lewis considered one of his role models. And if you read The Great Divorce by C.S. Lewis, he is led around by George MacDonald. But that one, it just felt like a fun, lighthearted fairy tale until, like, the very end, where the allegory aspect comes in and it whacks you upside the head, and it's like, oh wow, that was awesome, and I was in tears. It's a rare book that gives me that range of feeling, and I loved it. One of my favorite classics is The Light Princess. Another thing to not do would be, one thing to shy away from is making it a romantic sacrifice. In the right setting, you can get away with it, such as The Light Princess. That one was a well-done romance allegory, whereas a less well-done, or in my opinion, is if the reason The Light Princess could get away was because the character doing the sacrifice was still a mortal human. It was showing the power of love for a girl he loved, that he was willing to give his life for her. But a less well done is if it's an actual, still Jesus as the Son of God is giving his life for a mortal woman. So please shy away from and avoid that if you can. I have read some books that do that I love, aka Heartless by Anne Elizabeth Stengel. That is it's a good book, but the first book, because of that aspect, is my favorite book of the series. I much prefer the sequels, especially book 7 and 8. those two are like amazing. So I highly recommend that series. I just meh about the first book. In fact, I recommend you starting with book four. That one's the first one chronologically. You'll have to come back and read them rest in order to understand later the last two books, last three books. But anyway.
I got my microphone working properly.
Yay, that's awesome. Hi, how's the future?
Good. Not
good,
too cold, not too hot.
Okay, it's good to hear that about the future. She lives in Australia, so say she's from the future. So, Bree, would you like to introduce yourself now that you're here?
Yeah, I lost my brain.
You lost your what? Oh,
my brain.
You lost your brain?
Oh, my tongue or something.
Well, Bree is not yet a published author. She's got some writing projects, but she's a good friend of mine. She beta read my Bonfire Print and even the Dewey. And she's off my, so I can know what happens in the future. I keep her around.
I hope it has something out in a couple of years.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Probably less too.
I've got
a little, a very slight allegorical element in one book, and in the current one, well, I'm not really sure what's going on in that one yet, because I'm only at the beginning of writing it.
Yeah. I have a multi where all of my worlds, not the Inkulin worlds, but all of my other, most of my other worlds are all connected in one multiverse. And in this world, I give everyone free range to this system that I use here. How I use allegories is that all the worlds are not in sync when it comes to time. It was one moment, and it was actually there are two or three other moments, but when Jesus died on the cross, it was one moment that all the worlds came in at sync for that fight against all the worlds. So that's why I love doing allegories, is I like to see all the different ways that that moment came about. Sometimes it's more interesting than others. Sometimes it's less more frustrating than others.
Okay, what's the essential elements of that moment for any allegory?
Jesus has to die. And then 3 days later, come back, or some period of time later, he has to come back to life. And that time while he is in the grave is while the worlds are in sync. And some of the time moves a little faster than others. Not their fault. So like in Narnia, it only was like one day, whereas on our world, in Earth, it was 3 days.
Yeah.
And then it came out of sync, and Laura can travel at whim again. Now, what would you say are the essential elements of an allegory?
Yeah, the ones you mentioned are good. And then, of course, there has to be some kind of sacrificial, redemptive, I don't know what word I'm looking for. I had a moment ago, bit of element to it as well. He can't just get killed and then come alive again. You know, he can't just randomly get killed in a battle.
Yeah, that's one of the things that really annoyed me about that one that I was mentioning as being that was the whole crux of the plot. It was taking place in the battle. He gave his life for a pregnant mare. They were all horses. This is the world of horses. And he gave his... this other horse is being attacked. The Jesus character took the kill and died. They had to all run back and hide in the hills. Just like, okay. So yeah. There has to be something saved. I'll agree on that. It has to be something. It has to be clear that the death is extinction. And a lot of it, usually it happens, but at the same time, that kind of creates a bit of the allegorical cliche, is I have as yet to read an allegory where the allegory is shown that the Jesus character doesn't give his life in a clear exchange. But you want to know something funny? When I read the Bible, that ain't what happened. What happened is he was outright betrayed. And I kind of want to see some more betrayal allegories out there.
I'll try and do it with mine then.
Yeah. I mean, the ones where it happened in the past, I've read two or three where it is says, oh, he was betrayed by a friend. The Blade Air by Daniel Adorno is a good example of that. But when it happens in the book, it's almost always in exchange for some character in the book. And while on the one hand, yes, it does a very good way of showing that Jesus gave his life as a ransom in exchange for ours. On the other hand, do we need to be told this every single time? I will say that is one thing that the Dragons in Our Midst series that I also was mentioning as one I did like. That one was betrayal. I will admit that. He was betrayed by a woman who he thought to be trusted and took him in the back alley and stabbed him.
Yeah, one of my favorites, is called The Ancient Machine. It's in a series, it's in the Georgie Tanner series. The first one is called The Magician's Daughter, and it's somewhat an exchange, yet I like about it, how it does a really big job of showing how he was the only one who could take this death. Because in some of these other stories, you could just have any human, you know, be exchanged for this other person. And, I mean, of course, they wouldn't come back to life again, but it would still work for the plot.
Yeah, for the most part. Well, even in Narnia, he's like, if the person gives their life in exchange, it'll crack the stone and they'll come back to life. It doesn't say that it had to be Aslan. If Peter had given his life for Edmund, it would have worked.
Doesn't it say something about the person being perfect there?
Hang on, let me go get my copy and I'll look.
I wish I had mine. Or at least the person had been innocent that time.
Uh, Okay, my copy is not where I thought it was, which means it is buried in my pile of mess. Yeah. I don't remember off the top of my head, and I don't have my copy on hand, apparently.
Yeah, I haven't got a copy on hand either.
Well, yeah. But I don't remember for sure, for certain, but again, yes. I mean...
This one, it kind of had to be a person who took it, and everyone else had some small amount of evil, and it all turned into a monster by this time. So they couldn't be the one to die.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of quirky. They're very quirky books.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Yeah.
And another thing I would caution against is make sure it's clear that it's in another world, like Narnia. The exception was, of course, the dragons in our midst, because the character was a savior for the dragons, not for the humans. It worked for him.
Yeah.
But... for instance, I read a book as one of my crack out, let's see if I can hit my reading goal, last year. I read a book where it really very much felt like it's in our world, and I'm like, what, Ethan? I do not understand. This book is, I mean, if it was in another book, and it had some really good allegorical truths in it, but at the other hand, I had took some theological issues with it. Because it seemed to be like, are you nullifying the Calvary that already happened?
Mm. I have a tendency to take theological issue with certain books as well.
Yeah. And
you talk first.
Yeah, so really, if you're writing an allegory, you are setting yourself for some very stiff scrutiny, especially if I read it. I will tear it apart. I have never read an allegory that I've been completely satisfied with.
Yeah.
But I still love them. Because they all show a different side, or at least most of the good ones do. If I like it, it shows a side I hadn't seen before.
Yeah, there was one series in which seemed like somewhere way back in their history there was a son of God who had died. It was, and he saved them from, I think that would kind of be, the whole world was going to be controlled by demons at the time, or something like that. But then later on there was a certain king, and then another guy later who also had to die, and it just, I'm thinking, okay, this is a cool book. It has lots of cool things in it, but what is this thing? Why are other people having to die? I mean, people do have to die sometimes, but it just didn't quite fit right.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a good point. I mean, you have to make Jesus' death unique and essential. And we're hitting the 30-minute mark, so I'm going to run my dad's ad. We'll be back in just a minute.
Hi, this is Tim Roden, host of Sunday Night right here on Eagle's Nest Broadcasting. We take a look at world events in light of Bible prophecy, and we do Bible study, so you know what God thinks about our times. So tune in right here every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Central Time on Eagle's Nest Broadcasting.
Yeah, you have to make sure that it's essential that Jesus was to death and not. And also making it clear that this death is for everyone and not just this love interest is essential. Mm-hmm. My biggest qualm with the Goldstone Woods, I love the series, just that does irk me.
Well, I've heard someone say that they were Narnia because C.S. Lewis was kind of giving a picture of what Christ did, but he wasn't actually meaning Aslan to exactly be Christ in this other world. And in some sense, he only did die for Edmund, but it still connects to people to communicate what Christ did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know that Tolkien especially don't consider what he wrote to be allegories. But today's broad definition that I'm using tonight, we are talking about what C.S. Lewis did.
Yeah.
As an allegory. Because we're talking about the scenes that show a different... My mom just popped into my private chat with this comment that she wants me to read. She's like, she says, allegories do best when they do not try to overuse a concept or try to cover too many topics. They are snapshots. So it's essential that you understand what you are focusing on and you go with it.
If you try and make it a perfect representation of everything that happened then, you're probably not actually going to focus on any aspect enough for it to be worth reading.
Mm-hmm.
If you try and make it exactly the same, it's not going to be new.
No, it's going to be the Bible.
Yeah.
And I think the Bible was already written. Sorry, you're a little bit late to the party. But yeah, I would say the biggest thing is be accuracy, but at the same time, do not sacrifice accuracy for the snapshot.
Yeah.
So don't try to make it say what it isn't. This is God coming to earth to give his life for puny, pitiful, sinful man who does not even deserve it. We don't deserve heaven. We deserve, eternal torment apart from God.
Mm-hmm.
But this is God satisfying his mercy. This is God's mercy satisfying his justice in a perfect compromise that was such a sacrifice on his part. I mean, it is the most beautiful story in the world, and it deserves to be told 1,000 times. Care on the face, but it needs to be told properly.
It kind of slides the allegorical elements I have in one of my stories. It's not, and as far as I know, I'm kind of writing this in a different version of our world sometime in the past, so it connects to our world's history somewhere, but it's just a simple someone who has done something to deserve a particular punishment and just showing how they can't just be let off. There has to be some kind of someone else taking that for them to some degree, or sort of just how mercy can be given is kind of what I'm focusing on, not the actual.
The mini the mini pictures that happen from time to time.
Yeah.
As I was mentioning in the opening, I'm not sure you caught that because your microphone was giving you issues. I led in with discussing Isaac was a forerunning picture. And then in several of Jesus' parables were, again, forerunning pictures. In particular, the story of the landlord with his unfaithful tenants.
Yeah.
So God this was important enough thing to God that he told the story multiple times even before it happened.
I mean, they sort of told the story every time there was a sacrifice given for a sin.
Yeah,
there?
Exactly. Every sacrifice, I mean, look through the book of Leviticus. It's huge. What's his name? J. Vernon McGee. He wrote a book about how the tabernacle was a forerunning picture of Jesus. So God kept telling over and over again ahead of time what's going to happen. And I do recommend reading that and seeing what are the pictures God gave as a base point, jumping point, pogo stick. Rain, come back here. So what would you say you shouldn't do, or things you shouldn't do when writing an allegory?
Don't try and make a direct parallel while also hiding that you're making a direct parallel. I'm not sure of a better way to explain that.
Don't be clever in the way you're hiding it.
Yeah.
Don't be too clever. Yeah, I think what she's referring to is the Kingdom books by Chuck Black. I believe it is. I went and looked it up on my Kindle and then I forgot to read it. My Kindle froze. That's what happened. Kingdom's Edge, Kingdom's Call, Kingdom's Everything.
Yeah.
And that whole series is nothing but, it's the whole Bible from Genesis to Revelation told in the span of maybe 100 years. It's in two characters' lifetime.
About 100 years, yeah.
Two characters' lifetimes. It's probably even less than that. I know the last book covers 10 years, and say the first two covered 10. Then there were a large gap between books 2 and 3, and then I really liked the last three. Because they retold elements that I had not seen elsewhere before, and also that it didn't try to cram as much into them. I mean, the first one was.
When you have one guy being everybody from
the Old Testament, yeah, that guy needs a break.
To Daniel, it's kind of a bit stretched. Squashed.
It's no, not just Seth to Daniel. It's Seth to Ezra, because he took him back to the land too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mom just piped in with, "If you add too much water to your juice, it tastes weird, and nobody really wants to drink it." Yeah, don't water it down. Make it clear what you're doing, but don't try to be too clever. Yeah, it's again another thing you have to balance between subtlety and clarity. And
yes.
And not trying to cram too much in. I mean, I really like how they handled Paul. That was a really well, that one or two, I forget whether it was one or two. The two that dealt with Paul, I really liked them, and I really liked the one for the end times, because I don't see a lot of allegory for that. And I'm sorry, that exchanging the Athens for a joust, that was just awesome.
Yeah.
I mean,
I like that, I liked them better the first time I read them. The second time, I feel a little bit annoyed me for some unexplained reason.
Yeah, they're definitely a one-time read. I only read them once, and I'm like, I don't need to read them again. Especially not. But again, I feel that the one that they did, the sacrifice book, Kingdom's Edge, was the weakest one of the book. I mean, while I liked the other, I mean, as itself, it was not a bad one. But I've read so many much better allegories of that particular element. It brought nothing new to the table, as far as I could tell. But I love the last three books. Not necessarily books I'm going to read again, but I did love them for my read. All right, it's a bit of a spaghetti. Sorry, I had spaghetti for supper, so it's on my brain. But again, another thing is be respectful, because this is such an awe-inspiring moment, which is why I say make it essential to the plot. Make it, though you don't need to hinge your plot on it, you do need to make it essential to the plot, because it's such a magnanimous event in the world's history. You know, for the Old Testament is literally, the entire point of the Old Testament is setting the stage for this event. And everything after it is just what happens after. How do we live with it now?
Yeah.
That is the entire focus of the Bible. So if it's so important to God, which it is, it's so important to us, it's something we need to approach with prayer and don't just toss one
any,
in. What's that?
Writing any. You talk.
Yeah. Allegory, because you feel that it's the cool thing that an author, a Christian fantasy author, should do. But the reason I say that every Christian fantasy author should do it at some point in their life is because it really gives you a respect for the event.
Yeah.
And I know that every time I have written one, and I have written a particular one multiple times, I see something new in it. I understand it in a different angle. And every time I read one, I understand, I see another angle, or at least every time I read a good one.
Yeah.
So that's why I say you should, but don't do it just because you want to be a cool Christian author. And you feel that that is the essential part of Christian fantasy. It really isn't. Yes, you should do it. Yes, you should know where that factors into your world's history. I really like books where it is a established fact of the past. The groups I've read would be Talk of That Caliber, would be Toxic by Vicky Lucas, Blade Air by Daniel Adorno, and Blood of Kings trilogy by Jill Williamson are really good books where it took place in the world's past, where it's still very relevant to the book's present. But because it took place in the past, we really don't have to worry about all the intrinsic details of what went into it. So it's essential that you do so as a Christian fantasy author. You need to do it so you can understand it better. And you need to approach it with respect and only write it if you really feel called to do so. The reason I wrote the Apulian as an allegory, it's because that is really what laid on my heart and said, Indra, this is what the story needs to be. And
what you said about, you know, approaching it with prayer, of course you should approach all of your writing like that, not just write random things for the sake of having a story.
Yeah, agreed. It's just that, especially, do not take this for granted. I think readers will forgive you for random writing anywhere else, but if you have an allegory that you just slapped in for the sake of having one, that is a no-no.
Yeah, because I've got one that is happening just in the past of the book I'm currently writing, and kind of a bit of a loss of exactly how I'm approaching it at the moment.
Yeah, we were just discussing that in chat. And it will possibly help you eventually when I clear my head, but yeah.
Or I might just figure it out when I actually get to people talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, I have a book where it happened in the very recent, as in the main character's father, one of the main character's father was actually the one who killed Jesus. The Jesus character. In one of the books, I actually shared you a snippet of that book the other day. If you want to guess which book I'm talking about,
New Division.
New Division, yes. That one, it only took place like 20 years ago, and so the world is still reeling from it. And it's really, really awesome what I'm doing with that. But because it only took place 20 years ago, it's really not, it's not something that is, yeah, it's, where am I going with this thought?
I'm thinking, so the fact that it's only just happened, is that quite important to the story?
Yes, it is. The story itself is kind of talking about, is kind of an allegory of the early church era, is how the world is reacting to this sudden new change of, now the division isn't Jew and Gentile, the division is, are you a follower of Self or are you not? His name in that world is Self.
Yeah. I've actually got my dad in here, and he's got a question for me to ask, which is sort of how important his studying history in general is to writing a good allegory.
I would say, yeah, studying allegory should be important. Understanding what was the social things going on. I mean, if you read the Bible, you don't understand just how terrible the crucifixion is. I mean, yeah, it sounds terrible, but when you actually go in and study what was going on at that time, why was Pilate pulling out, understand all the nuances of that, it is a good way to help. By understanding the actual event, you can understand what is the nuances you can or you might ignore in your own. Yeah, similar to someone was asking how, if you should read all versions of a fairy tale before you write a retelling, even if you're not going to, you're barely going to ignore the fairy tale in the first place. You're just using a starting point. I said, read as many versions as you can and as many sister versions, which are fairy tales that are similar but not quite. That way you can understand the full scope and measure of the tale. And by understanding the full scope, not so much so you know your limits, but so you can know you know where to start.
Just thinking, do you know, well, other than The Light Princess, which you already mentioned, any fairy tales that are got a strong allegory to them?
I'm trying to rack my brain and I'm not calling them up at time. Let me pull up my. I know that King Saint George and the Dragon. I've heard that one was supposed princess was supposed to represent the church being saved from the dragon.
Yeah.
But
as to whether that was what it was written, why it was written originally, or if someone was actually going out and destroying a big creature and somebody added the meaning in later, we can't know now.
I don't know. I would say there's a number.
Yeah.
Mom wants to know if are you combining historical fiction telling a story from a fictional character who could have or did love with an allegory that which tries to show truth through a new medium. No, I don't think so. The reason I'm saying studying history is so you know the scope and breadth of what was going on so you can understand all the nuances of it, and by understanding the nuances, you can better pick up on what nuance you want to take, what snapshot you want to focus on.
And also, studying history, you can see what different people thought about it at different times and ways people have reacted to it, and that gives you so many more ideas as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have thought of one that is an allegory of the fall. I forget what it's called, but basically the fairy tale goes there's a farmer and his wife, and the wife is complaining because paradise was lost. It might be paradise lost. Lost Paradise in the Lilac Fairy Book. Okay. Yeah, Lost Paradise in the Lilac Book by Andrew Lang.
Yeah.
This it was a charcoal burner. And the wife is complaining because, oh, if only Eve hadn't eaten that apple. And then out of nowhere, the king knocks at their door and's like, hey, I'm going to take you to my house. And you're going to live in luxury. And they're like, okay.
I've heard a version of that.
Yeah, he's like, here's this container. It's like, no, don't open that. And as long as you don't open it, it'll be good. And they're like, oh, he won't know if he opens it. And open it, mouse pops out, and there was no getting it back.
And a big bell rang or something, a gong. In the latest version I remember. Yeah. There's a lot of fairy tales have some kind of allegorical element. There's that one of the fisherman and his wife, and she keeps wanting the bigger house and then to be king and to be emperor and to be pope and then to be
God. Like, yeah, she wanted to control the rise instead of the sun. God's like, can't grant that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Mom just popped in with VeggieTales is the allegory for children. All right, we're down to 5 minutes. So, tie up remarks is have respect for the fairy tale and focus on the snapshot, not the full picture. Don't make it a.
You meant to say the crucifixion story, not the fairy tale, didn't you?
For what?
You said have respect for the fairy tale. Is that what you meant?
Yeah,
I mean, if you're doing a fairy tale retelling, you should have respect for the fairy tale, but it's not quite the same.
Mom just popped in with a Pandora's box. Yeah, I suppose it is. It is a Greek myth, though, so I'm not so sure it's so much a allegory.
Yeah, it's a Greek
myth. It is mortal man's trying to explain why everything's wrong in the world.
I suppose that one is somewhat similar, because in one case it was they were unable to keep from eating the fruit, and in this case it was unable to keep from opening the box. But then the Greeks were descended from Adam and Eve too, so they knew something.
They knew something. All right. And where can we find you on the interwebs?
I've got my website, breedonning.com, and then I'm on Facebook and Twitter, and I've got Pinterest boards with pictures for various of my stories. And the website, I think it's got links up for everywhere at the moment. I've just been setting stuff up.
And my website for Draft Crafts is finally, well, the blog part is up. It's Kendra's DraftCrafts.com, and just plain Draft Crafts wasn't available, so I had to make Kendra's Draft Crafts. And this weekend through Tuesday, the Inkulin is currently free, and that is my allegory. And it's also a great book for anyone who wants to write, who is a Christian author.
Yeah.
It's a very good book because I wrote it as a sort of a message for authors. Like, why do we write? This is why. It's a battle call. It's a battle cry, this book. And
so you should read it.
Yeah, everyone, I should read it. That's a very good idea.
Yeah. Just thinking other books you've mentioned and a couple I've mentioned, maybe can you add those to the notes?
I probably can. You send me links to the ones you have. I'll get in some Goodreads links.
I know the first book's available as an ebook, and the others might only be available in Australia because that's an Australian self-published author who I think is a bit obscure these days.
Yeah. Now we've got 90 seconds left. I'm just going to shut us down. Mom says I didn't finish my points. I only have 2. Okay. I'm not sure what she means by that. So just have respect for the crucifixion. Respect for what you're doing. Don't do it because you feel like it's the cool thing to do. Do it because you want to better understand the story. And don't feel like you have to publish it either. Just write it for you.
Which, of course, is always hard for us because we want to publish something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm an attention hog. I want to publish everything I write. It's a bit ridiculous. So, anyway, happy writing and a happy Easter to everyone out there in the world who celebrates Easter. Yours is tomorrow.
Yeah.
Mine is the day after that because you live in the future. All right. Happy writing, and thank you, Bree, for joining us today in the future. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.